Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I don't know if you noticed this, but I didn't play any audio from Washington's overtime victory over Oregon State last night during Punch It Audio, and I did that intentionally because I didn't want to steal the thunder of our next guest. Our next guest, Nick Daschle of The Oregonian. You can read him on Oregon Live. He was in that building last night. Were you entertained, Nick Daschle?
Well, I was entertained till late when I was trying to put together a story as the score was changing hands left and right. But yeah, no, it was entertaining for sure.
First world problem there. I always complain to people about deadlines. Nobody cares except you and I. That's it. I got you though.
But aren't we all that matter?
What did you think? What's your big takeaway? Because they've lost three in a row, but they've been in all these games. If you're spinning it positive, what are you telling Beaver Nation?
Well, I mean, they played pretty well, and Washington's a good team. I mean, I know the Pac-12's taken a beating, but Washington's a good team on most nights, and they played pretty well. I mean, I even asked David Crisp after the game. You know, I said, just confirm to me, did you guys play pretty well? And he said, yeah, you know, they did, and because I didn't, you know, I wanted to make sure that it wasn't Washington just played terrible and Oregon State hung in there because the Huskies weren't any good. Oregon State played well on both ends of the floor, except, you know, on those last few possessions, particularly the final one in regulation where nobody seemed to move when inside, where if they just had anybody flash to the high post, I think they would have got something.
Do you think Oregon State walks away with a moral victory? I know Wayne Tinkle afterward was kind of adamant that he doesn't know what a moral victory is, but I kind of think they got one last night.
Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, I know nobody in sports is supposed to be talking about moral victories, but I mean, if they play that game against 10 other teams in the Pac-12, they win last night. I mean, I think I mentioned to you, I think if they play like that, you know, from here on out, they're going to win Saturday, and they're going to get to the Pac-12 title game. I don't know if they could do that, you know, on four consecutive days, but that was as well as they played all year, I think.
There's a possibility for a seven-way tie for fourth place in the Pac-12 tournament race. How important is it for, I guess it's the utmost importance. If Oregon State wins, are they the four seed?
They're either three or four, depending on what happens with UCLA and Utah. But yeah, they're definitely in the top four if they beat Washington State on Saturday. If Utah or UCLA sweep their final two games, then they'll be four. If they both split, they'll be three.
I know,
and three is definitely better than four.
I know Oregon State swept the season series with the Ducks, but those two teams appear to be trending in different directions. Is that an accurate statement? Or, you know, if they meet again in Vegas, do you think Oregon State wins all three of these games this season?
I don't know. I mean, let's see what Oregon does Saturday night. Cause I mean, the winning at Washington State, I mean, I don't know what that says, but they did play pretty well last weekend. I don't, you know, Oregon State, you know, they've lost four games by a total of 11 points. And one of them was an overtime game. You know, they're just not making a few plays here and there, and they could be as hot as Oregon right now. They just haven't finished the game.
Who's the best player in the Pac-12? Who should be Pac-12 Player of the Year?
If Trace had moved last night on that last play, I would say Trace, but he didn't. You know, I think you got to give it to one, probably Matisse Thybulle from Washington, because he's such a difference maker on the defensive end, and he can score some too. But he makes that team just because they're so tough to score against defensively, and he's their best player on defense.
Washington feels vulnerable to me, though. I watched that game last night, and I just thought they're not a dominant conference champion. We're in a league where everything's going to be a dogfight. They got pressed on their home court by Oregon State last night on a neutral court, knowing that they're probably in the tournament. I wonder in Vegas if they are ripe for somebody else to come up and win that thing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially if they're not hitting threes. I mean, both the games against Oregon State, they seem to just keep knocking them out with those three-pointers. But if they're not hitting those, yeah, oh, no. And, you know, if Dickerson gets in foul trouble, I mean, if Kyler Kelly didn't have to guard Dickerson last night like he did, he would have been a factor down the stretch. He was just worn out from, you know, from having to guard Dickerson all night long. But no, Washington is. In fact, I even said it to one of the Seattle writers up there. I said, I mean, do you think Washington, I mean, they're no lock to win the tournament, are they? And he says, oh, God, no. It's pretty definitive.
You're going to get to see the Ducks. Are you going to catch them? So you're going to the game, Washington State game, and then are you going to turn around and see the Ducks?
No, I'm only going to the Oregon Washington game on Saturday night.
Okay.
In part because it's a meaningful game. I mean, if Oregon wins, they go into the Pac-12 tournament, a 4-game winning streak. And, you know, and obviously our Duck guys down at the Pac-12 women's tournament. That's, you know, part of the reason I'm going too. But I think we got a shot because, you know, Saturday night is Washington's senior night. And they've got more seniors than anybody in the Pac-12. They're going to be emotional, and those games are tough to play when you got all these seniors playing their last home game, and you know they're caught up with certain things. I think Oregon's in a good spot on Saturday.
I think
not predicting they're going to win, but they got a shot.
So let's just say, is there a scenario in which Oregon and Oregon State both end up in the top four?
Yeah. Yeah, but UCLA has to lose both their games. UCLA has, because Oregon loses all tiebreakers with UCLA, because if they get involved with Oregon State and UCLA at 10-8, they're 0-4 against those two teams. So they have to have UCLA lose both. If they get in a situation where they're with Oregon State, and Utah has to split too, that's the other one that has to happen. So. Yeah, because they win a lot
That's
of
right.
tiebreakers otherwise. So yeah, they could be Oregon State could be 3 and Oregon could be 4.
Nick Daschle of the Oregonian with us. All right, give us what you think will matter in Las Vegas. What will matter there? Because aside from just playing well, is it going to come down to coaching? Is it going to come down to the best players in the league carrying their team? What are going to be the difference makers when you have a conglomeration of teams that are on about the same level? What's going to separate this bunch?
Well, I mean, 3-point shooting always matters in these kind of tournaments. You get hot from the outside, you can steal a game that maybe you shouldn't win. I think it always comes down to, you know, getting a bye too. I mean, winning 4 games has proven to be almost impossible down there. That's why, you know, Oregon State and Oregon both need to win Saturday and hope things break right for them. Because, I mean, I'm looking at the box score here from last night. Oregon State had 3 guys play 42, 45, and 45 minutes. You can't play 4 games in a row when you're asking your 3 best players to play those kind of minutes every night.
We're talking to Nick Daschle of the Oregonian, Oregon Live. All right, Daschle. Great job on covering this. The psyche of Oregon State, before I cut you loose, they've lost 3 straight. There's some teams that would be rattled by that. Are they okay? Like, did you get a sense in the locker room that they will spin out of this, or is this a team that has got questions to answer?
Well, I mean, of course, when you lose this many close games in a short stretch, but I didn't get the sense they were all that, you know, tight last night. I saw them mingling around on the floor last night afterward, and they didn't seem, you know, super down about things. So, yeah, you get off to a good start against Washington State, and I think they'll take care of business over there. They've handled themselves pretty well against Washington State in recent years.
Daschle, I appreciate you, man. Stay safe.
All right, we'll see you.
All right, there he is, Nick Daschle of the Oregonian, Oregon Live. 7 teams Austin Meek of the Eugene Register Guard laid out today on Twitter. Here's how you get a seven-way tie. You'd need Washington to beat Oregon, Washington State to beat Oregon State, Utah to beat UCLA, USC to beat Colorado, Stanford beat Cal, Arizona over Arizona State, Utah beats USC, and then Colorado beats UCLA. You got a seven-way tie for fourth. Everybody's 9-9. Larry Scott comes out with the gold-plated coin, his face on both sides. He flips it seven times to break the tie, and then he pockets the thing. That's how it ends. We're going to talk about Justin Herbert, the Ducks quarterback. I'm going to throw a question out to you, and I want you to grab the phone lines now. There are some people who believe Justin Herbert has been underwhelming in his time at Oregon. There are others who believe that this is just the natural progression for a quarterback. So which is it? Are you expecting big things from Herbert? Sure. But to this point, has his tenure at quarterback for Oregon been disappointing? You tell me. 503-417-7575. We just got invaded in the studio by Erica Rhodes, comedian, who will be at Helium Comedy Club. You're like a half an hour early, which is awesome, because nobody is ever on time, but I'm putting you right on.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah. We were just starting to talk when we got interrupted. You say you're from Boston?
I'm from Boston, yeah.
But you live in L.A.
I live in L.A.
Do you still have to live in L.A. in today's like entertainment world to...
I mean, I don't know. It's a little debatable with comedy. Yeah. You can kind of live in New York, too.
Why'd you pick L.A.?
Well, when I moved to L.A., I was doing acting.
Oh.
So that would, yeah, make
sense. How was that going?
Well, I switched to comedy. That says it all.
That's it right there.
I have this voice. This voice is not that conducive to acting. It's kind of like, you know.
You're at Helium tonight at 8 o'clock, 7:30 and 10 tomorrow night, 7:30 and 10 on Saturday, heliumcomedy.com to get tickets. Tell me about, like, why, I'm always curious how you get, like, decide this is what you wanted to do. Like, at what age were you performing, or did somebody say you're funny, or was it a talent show, or what was it?
I just started in radio. I started on this radio show called A Prairie Home Companion, and did that when I was 10 years old, and so I've been doing that my whole life.
That's weird that you were 10 years old and already, like, that's savant, that's like Doogie Howser. You know,
I think I was better back then. You know, I think I was really good when I was 10. My whole life, I'm just trying to get back to how good I was when I was 10 years old. You know,
that's awesome. But you had to have an environment. You must have had parents who were funny people who encouraged that.
Yeah, my mom's a violinist, and my dad used to play clarinet, and they're pretty funny. My mom's funny by accident. My dad's funny on purpose.
That's so fun. Yeah. That's so interesting. Yeah. How about family? What's the family dynamic? Brothers, sisters?
I have an older sister. She's pretty normal.
What's she do?
She's a teacher and a mom.
See?
Yeah.
She must be really proud of you, though, and she must tell, like, her class, hey, my sister's in comedy.
Actually, the first time that people thought I was funny was when I gave a wedding speech at her wedding, and I thought I was giving this very genuine, sweet, you know, speech. And it got so many laughs. And I was like, wait, this wasn't supposed to be funny. Yeah. I thought I was being like really nice and sweet. And everyone after that was like, you should do comedy. You're hilarious.
Did people have you do their toasts after that? Did everybody want you at their weddings?
No, I didn't get hired after that. But great. Now I feel like a real failure.
Erica Rhodes. That's why you come to the show. We keep you grounded.
Yeah,
Erica Rhodes is with us. She'll be at Helium Comedy Club tonight, 8 o'clock. Tomorrow night, 7:30 and 10. Saturday night, 7:30 and 10. That's a lot of shows. How do you keep... I do 3 hours, and I have to hydrate.
Whoa.
I have to come in, like, energized. How do you do all those shows and not lose momentum?
Well, ask me after, you know? I'm a coffee addict. I drink a lot of coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do a lot of drugs. No, just kidding. I don't do drugs. Just coffee.
You're from Boston, but you're not a sports fan.
Well, I'm not. I'm a sports fan to the point of I like to win.
Yeah.
I like the sports games. I like the sports teams that are winning, like the Patriots.
So you're a front runner.
What's that mean?
That's that what you just said. You're on the bandwagon.
When I hear that Boston won, I go, yeah, I'm a Boston fan. Yeah, go Red Sox.
Boston's
go
had
Patriots.
A good run.
Yeah, we're pretty good at stuff.
It's been a good run. And then you bailed and went to L.A. How much of your act is stuff talking about kind of your childhood background? How much of it is just kind of current events? What do you do?
I don't do topical, really. I kind of avoid that. Yeah. I think there are people out there who do it better than I do. But I do mostly personal life stuff. You know, I talk about being in my 30s, not, you know, being single in my 30s and trying to find love like everybody else.
Is that harder now, you think, than it used to be?
I think it's easier, probably. I mean, more acceptable. I think, like, I think like 20 or like 50 years ago, if you were in your 30s and not married or anything, I think people were like, what? What's wrong with you?
But I always tell the millennials, like, we have Alabama Adriana down there, and I talk to her. I say, it's probably so hard for people to date because you have Instagram, Twitter. You can look into their life. You already can almost dismiss them.
Yeah, I think that I really think that online dating is like really weird. And yeah, you know too much too soon. And you're just like, next, next, next. No, thank you. No, thank you. You know? And yeah, I for sure think it's kind of a problem.
We're talking to Erica Rhodes about everything that's wrong in the world right now.
It's hilarious.
Helium buy tickets at heliumcomedy.com. 8 o'clock tonight, 7:30 and 10 tomorrow night, 7:30 and 10 on Saturday night. So at age 10, you've been in several movies. 1,000 Ways to Die.
Oh no, don't talk about any of those. No. Those are all just random weird credits.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're working. You gotta be proud. You should celebrate every moment.
No, I've done some TV. I did Modern Family and Veep and At Midnight and
What's that like to be on a set like Modern Family and do a...
That was fun. That was really... It was... You're in and out because they're experts. They've just... They just, you know, you just get in and get out.
Is there... When you're in a setting like that, is there a temptation to overact and try to... Or do you have to kind of restrain yourself? Like, I would think you would run... Like, they're watching. This is my time. I want to really...
Yeah, that is a problem. Like, especially if it's like a small... I think that smaller parts are sort of harder in that way where you're just like, you just have to say the lines and leave. You know, that's it.
Yeah.
Because
they're not looking for you to steal that scene.
Right. Yeah. You just say your few lines. I kind of get cast in kind of upbeat characters, though, that like, it's okay if it has a little more energy, I think. Yeah.
What's your process like when you find something funny, like... You know, let's just say coming here in the elevator or whatever, you notice something that you think you can work with. Do you text yourself or email yourself that or take a note on your phone or do you write something down?
Yeah, I write a note down and then I revisit it later and try to work it out on stage.
You are when you're working through it, are you what's your process there? Are you sitting somewhere or is it just you're on a plane or is it just a
random? I could be anywhere. Yeah, I could be anywhere and I write it out somewhere so that I have it because I'll forget. I'll think I'll remember it and then I forget. So yeah, I write down a note. I'll jot down a note that reminds me of what it is and then I'll work it out on stage and see if it works, you know, for other people, not just myself.
There'll be runs on this show where I think we have a good half hour and then there's other times where I feel like we're just slogging through a half hour. Do you get that way in comedy where you feel like you get all of a sudden something clicks, everything's lining up, the audiences are great? Do you have those runs?
Yeah, a lot of comics kind of compare it to like surfing, you know, like you get on the wave and then you just feel like you're just like gliding on the wave. You know, you catch the wave of laughter and then it's so easy. But if you don't catch it, it's like you're just like, you're really trying to get on it.
Just paddling out
there all
day.
You're kind of pushing and like, you know, really trying to get the laughs and it feels like work. Sometimes I'm on stage and it feels like work. And sometimes I feel like I'm on stage and I'm just like, I'm just at peace with everything.
I had somebody else say that when you're doing live performance, either a theater or a comedy or whatever that live thing is, that you either leave at the end of the day going, I'm going to do this forever. This is the greatest thing ever. Or I don't know how much longer I can do this.
Yes. Yeah. One good show can keep you going for a while, you know, but then they say you're only as good as your last show.
Yeah.
And so you feel like you're constantly proving yourself over and over, which is probably actually similar to sports.
Yeah.
You know, like sports, it's like you're only as good as your last game, you know?
That works.
Yeah, it's just...
That works.
You're like, sure. Yeah.
No. Well, anytime you try to connect... Because here's the thing, when we were booking you to come on, the response I got is it okay that she's not a sports fan? And I was like, yeah, that's even better. Because
Because then she'll make really bad analogies and try to compare comedies to sports, and it'll fail miserably.
More like your dad, like funny without trying to be funny.
Yeah.
Again, we're talking to Erica Rhodes, who was supposed to be here at like 2:15. She's way early. Are you an early person on purpose?
We just got the time wrong.
Got it messed up?
Yeah.
Got it backwards? That's okay.
Or just accidentally.
No, but that's fine. We'll take you whenever you show up. When Nick shows up, we just stop the show.
Yeah, as you should. Nick's a good guy.
What's the difference between a good audience and a bad audience in comedy? And do you prefer to come in after like the opening act has killed it? Or do you want them to just be decently okay setting the stage for you?
Sometimes I like when they kill it because that's like starting, then the audience is warmed up and they're ready to go, and then you can just like, you know, catch the wave of what they just did.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you have to kind of win them back and like get them going. You know, you want them to be going and want them to be excited to be there right away.
What do people recognize you from? What's that thing where when you're in the airport, they go, hey, you're from...
Nobody recognizes me. They'll be like, you look like my cousin Jessica.
That's it.
I'm not famous yet. That's why I'm here. I need to get famous.
But when you said a Prairie Home Companion, Peter over there was going, yes.
Like, I didn't even know there was a person behind me.
Like he had recognition of...
Well, some people... Well, look at him. He's wearing a Radio Yours shirt. He's wearing a radio shirt. Yeah,
he just stays in there all day.
People either love Prairie Home Companion, they know it, they're huge fans, or they're like, huh, Prairie what?
Yeah.
It's one or the other.
No confusion with Little House on the Prairie.
No.
That's different.
Different.
All right.
But it's a radio show for 40 years, one of the biggest NPR radio shows, and so people...
He knows
they
the
don't.
World.
I don't know if they recognize me from it, but they might... They might recognize my voice.
Do you get voice work? Because I think you said you have a bad voice.
I think you have a very memorable voice. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's good for comedy, but I don't get any...
You should.
Thank you.
Need a new agent. That's what you need. Let's fire your agent. That's why you're here.
My agent got me this.
Yeah, get rid of the agent. Erica Rhodes is here. Have you been to Portland before? Is this first visit?
Yes. I'm doing my album here. That's why I'm here. So I came here... like 6 months ago, I think.
You liked it?
A little longer. I loved it.
You gonna move here?
No.
Lot of single people in this city.
Good. Maybe I'll meet someone.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This could be it. Could ruin your comedy career by getting you a date.
Yeah, love really messes with your comedy. You don't want to do that.
Is it hard to be in a relationship while you're traveling around and you're in this business?
Yeah, a little bit. I tried dating a comic. That was kind of hard because our schedules are so crazy, both of us. Yeah.
Competition too?
A little competitive. Yeah, for sure.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Go see Erica Rhodes tonight, 8:00. Tomorrow night, 7:30 and 10:00. Saturday night, 7:30 and 10:00. And she's single. Is that good? Is that good promotion?
This is a dating show, right?
We did that one time.
Yeah?
We hooked somebody up that got engaged.
What?
We sent, there was a similar to you, a woman in her 30s who was complaining about there are no men out there. And we got 5 male listeners and we sent her on 5 dates in a row, 5 nights in a row.
What?
And after the Wednesday night date, she said, I'm done. This is the guy. They got engaged. Boom.
That's crazy.
So that could happen here.
Well, maybe you should do that for me.
We can do that.
All right.
We'll do that. Let's get you back on and we'll do it.
Okay.
5 days. You have to stay here 5 days, though. Can we do 3 dates and 3 nights?
Yeah. Just get a good one.
Get
at least one real winner.
One winner.
You know? Yeah.
Is there one winner out there?
One winner.
Erica, thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, leave it right here. We're going to talk about Justin Herbert. Is he any damn good or not?
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.